My mother is easily entertained. She just loves the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that begs your pardon. His favorite store advertises liquor in the front and poker in the rear. Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. I'm so happy that you're joining us today. It is a beautiful sunny day here in northern Illinois, and I'm guessing that it's also a beautiful sunny day in Arizona, although one of my valuable clients, my valued clients, Becky, told me that she read that there were monsoons going on. Well, the monsoon comes every summer. Sometimes it rains. Sometimes it's just monsoon season without much rain. I don't know what's going on, but we'll check in with Randy in a little while, and he will tell us what the weather in Arizona looks like. So what are we here for? We're here to help people feel a little more confident about traversing that line, that electric fence, that third rail from ACA or from the under 65 health insurance world to Medicare. And a lot of people are really worried about it. A lot of the people I talk to on a daily basis have started the process very early. In other words, they get all worried and they start doing research and they stumble across the Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. They find that on Amazon for the most part. A few people find it on Barnes & Noble, and they're always happy to have the colored illustrations, but it's a cheaper price on Amazon with black and white illustrations. And we have a paperback. We have a Kindle version. We have an audio book. So those are all available on Amazon, very reasonably priced. But people often buy the book way ahead of time. I've spoken to some people most recently within the last few months who have purchased every edition of the book from 2018 through to 2021, and these people are asking me when the 2022 book is coming out. I think that might be a little obsessive, but who am I to identify obsessive traits in others? I should just mind my own business. Anyway, a short version of the reason that we're here is contained within our 30-second radio spot. Randy helped me put this thing together last year, and if we're really, really quiet, Randy may play it for us right now. Let's listen.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
All righty, that's the way it works. We quiet down and Randy does his magical tricks and you get to hear the 30-second radio spot. But that's why we're here, to help people cross over into Medicare land. Now, when I say we, of course, I'm talking about Randy Carson. Oh, I forgot to mention my nephew, Drew McMillan, straight from Canada. He opens every episode and I don't know what his plans hold, but I'm told that his television show is leaving the airwaves or at least leaving new production. And so he is probably going to go into a different area of television entertainment. And that's my guess anyway. I'll keep you posted. So Randy Carson is the chief knob twister and button pusher and slide slider. And I don't know what you do over there, but you're a busy guy.
Oh, it's incredibly complex. As a matter of fact, oftentimes at the early stages of each podcast, I have to wake up.
Well, I've noticed that there's some snoring periodically. And sometimes I have to send back the recording and ask that you clean it up a little bit to get the random snoring out of it. But how are you today? Wait,
I'm good. You mentioned that you'd like to check in on the weather.
Becky told me the monsoons were making headlines in Houston, And so I'm thinking, where in the hell is it raining? Because it's not.
Well, we're getting some monsoon like weather, but certainly we're not floating away. It's kind of odd. You know, I've got a weather caster thing on my desktop on my computer.
Yep.
Every day. Now, here's the odd thing about today is Thursday. Friday, it says it's going to be rainy. Saturday, partly sunny. Sunday, same. Monday, same. But by the time we get to the next day, it's always rainy. Now, why they can't predict this more than 12 minutes ahead of time, I don't know. It's kind of, you remember the old wet rock, dry rock? You'd hang it upside out your porch.
It's a tool for forecasting the weather.
Yeah, I think that's what they do.
It's raining. Well,
yeah, I think that's what they do.
Well, the big joke for me was that everybody that graduates with a meteorology degree from any kind of college flocks to Arizona because it's the easiest place to predict the weather.
Oh, yeah.
The guy
absolutely.
Ever
you know, let me try it. Could I try, Doug?
Would you please?
Let me absolutely predict the weather for tomorrow.
Okay.
Sunny.
Ah, did you have to look at the rock in order to determine?
I did because you can tell if it's going to be sunny with the rock because there's a very, very distinct shadow on it.
Okay. All righty. Very good. Well, that sounds a little like Groundhog Day prognostication, but I'm starting to think that maybe meteorology is not as scientifically based as they used to tell us.
I'm not sure about that. But hey, you know, I do have, as you know, we're beginning to get quite a following of our little spiel called Stump the Insurance Expert.
Well, I know exactly why that is. People are enjoying seeing me stumped. And it's not as much fun as it sounds, ladies and gentlemen. And being stumped has its downside, but I know what's coming.
Well, you know, I've got some things for you today that you are highly qualified in, and I think you have a very good possibility of doing well. You always do well, but I think this may be better.
I can see he's trying not to laugh. He's trying to hold his
face. Okay, here we go. We're gonna do two of them.
Alrighty, I'm ready.
Henry Ford produced the Model T only in black because the black paint available at the time was the blank.
Is that it?
There's no more.
The black paint at the time was, did I do that correctly?
Yep, Henry Ford produced the Model T only in black because the black paint available at the time was
the least expensive available.
Wrong.
Ah, I can smell Dominic Regina's fingers all over this question. It's some kind of the black paint came out of a volcano in New Jersey. I don't know. Tell me what the answer is.
It was the fastest to drive.
Oh, yeah. God. You know, I knew that. Oh, all right. Okay, I apologize to Dominic. I apologize to you. I'm going to take the blame for that one myself.
Okay. So now here's another little more obscure thing about the automotive industry. But I'm going to ask you anyway. It would take how many new mid-sized cars, meaning current, meaning modern, how many mid-sized cars to generate the same amount of pollution that a mid-sized car did in the 60s?
I'm going to use a nice round number and say about 100. When you take into account the fact that mid-sized or any size cars today are fuel injected, so they're running at their optimum capacity for fuel burning, but not running too rich, which adds to pollution. They are smaller, so the engines are smaller. So I'm guessing that you're saying the average mid-sized car today would be a 4-cylinder rather than a 6 or an 8-cylinder. And then also, the catalytic converters are converting most of the pollution to less noxious byproducts like humidity or water, you know, water vapor. And so I'm going to say 100.
Well, you're on the right path, as you always are, Doug, but you're a little bit more generous than it really is. It would take 20.
Oh boy, that's I'm way off. The reason I threw out that large number was that I heard somebody say, and I can't verify this, but if one were to decide to commit suicide, went in the garage in a modern car and closed the doors, closed the garage door, and turned on the car and just waited for the sweet release of death to occur by falling asleep, breathing carbon monoxide. I've heard that the exhaust in cars today is so clean that it may not be possible, unless that garage is sealed tighter than a drum, for someone to actually ingest a fatal dose of carbon monoxide before the gas tank goes dry. I don't know if that's true or not, and I'm certainly not going to test it. But that's what I was basing my guess on.
Well, I think that's a valid guess. Okay, I've got one. I'm not going to ask you to guess this because there's just no way you would know this, but it's just an amazing fact.
Lay it on.
Jumbo jets use 4,000 gallons of jet fuel just to take off.
Yep. Doesn't surprise me at all. And in fact, the airlines are always looking for new technology to make their planes run more efficiently. And one change that they made on a plane, I can't remember the plane, and maybe I shouldn't even say it because it was the focus of a show that I like to watch on the Weather Channel called Mayday. This show, Mayday, is all about airline disasters and the investigative techniques that people use when they're trying to figure out what happened, whether it was human error or mechanical error. And in this situation, this was a very, very popular airplane. A lot of airlines have a bunch of these planes, but retrofitted, the engines were retrofitted with newer models that were a whole lot more powerful and a lot more efficient. And the engines that they were putting on were a larger diameter. So they bolt these engines up under the wing, but because the engines were larger diameter, they had to move them forward so that they could go up and not be as close to the ground when the plane was taking off and landing. So the act of moving them forward and moving them up caused the airflow over the wing to change. And that made it more critical for them to have the flaps and the spoilers or whatever in the right positions. And so they investigated one crash where the pilots kind of forgot to do that. And it was all because of the newly reconfigured, more powerful, more efficient engines. Oh, are we finished for today?
No.
Geez. Well,
no, we're not.
You got a cake in the oven?
No, cookies.
Well, anyway, so, enough about airline disasters. Let's talk
enough of airline disasters, enough of great, you know, very fun automotive information. I got to get out my little ball bat. I don't have one. You know, if I could use your little ball bat, I need to get you off on some Medicare stuff.
When I come to Arizona, you can use it. Believe me. I've been getting a lot of people asking me about the Social Security Administration and how efficient and effective they're being at processing applications. And frankly, this has come up so frequently lately, I'm starting to think there might be a problem in the Social Security Administration. Let's call them the SSA. Back in the 1960s, Congress appointed the Social Security Administration to administer Medicare to the elderly of the states. And so what happened was the SSA obviously became a much bigger bureaucracy, added a million employees, took on the responsibility of administering the Medicare program. It's titled something or other of an existing program that created Social Security. They just added on to that bill. So anyway, the Social Security Administration has to be contacted whenever you want to make a change, like to apply for Medicare for the first time, or to maybe you've been burdened with an IRMA penalty. IRMA is spelled I-R-M-A-A. And it stands for income-related monthly adjustment amount, and that is the success penalty. And so it's the kind of thing that the IRS tells the Social Security Administration how much you made 2 years ago, and the SSA says, oh, you're successful, we're going to charge you more for Medicare than other people would get charged. And that's because you are successful. Now, I think the theory is they want to grab some money because you are retiring. And so they anticipate that your income is going to go down, but it is not immediate. So 2 years back, you might have filed a tax return that said, here's how much I made. And SSA is going to say, well, pay us a penalty because you made a ton of money. And then 2 years later, maybe your earnings are much, much smaller because you've retired. SSA will stop that penalty. Or if you're continuing to be very successful, they will continue that penalty because they get a report from the IRS every 2 years. But this subject I'm talking about today is how quickly is the Social Security Administration and their employees, how quickly are they responding to requests that people have for service? I could understand if this were a year ago and they were all hiding under their beds, because my understanding was the offices were all closed. You could not go in person. So they made some concessions in signature requirements. For instance, you don't need a signature on a form that you used to need a signature for, because they understand that a lot of people are not available to sign forms. So they've said, we're not going to enforce that requirement, things like that. But I've just started hearing from people. Actually, I've started having people ask me, how long does it take to have my Medicare application approved? And I can't tell them an answer, because one thing is it's different than it was not that long ago, longer and more frustrating, but it's also different in various other portions of the country. Plus, various individuals that I talk to are more persistent. Some are more persistent than others. And they eventually are more successful in finding a bureaucrat, a clerk in this giant bureaucracy that will find a way to get their problems solved. And so there is no one answer, even though people say to me, how long does this take? There is no one answer. Now, we have a good friend named Steve. Steve is Mr. Curious. He has always been asking questions that give us podcast content, because he has come up with all kinds of interesting things because he's a curious guy. But he has been shadowed with this burden of the IRMA penalty because he's been successful. He just enrolled in Medicare, and he is a valued client of mine. He came to Medicare for the Lazy Man to get his Medicare supplement. But now the Medicare people have said, the Social Security Administration has said, because of his financial success, he's going to get socked with an IRMA penalty. And Steve is saying, I believe that I can file a form SSA-44 that will convince them that my high income was a fluke, and that will allow them to remove the penalty because it was not a result of my ongoing earnings, but an unusual thing like the sale of his retirement assets or something like that. So he's been really messing with this for a long time. The most recent note I have from him was, he asked me, does anyone tell you how long it took to get their SSA-44 processed? Friday, I called and left a voicemail for the person handling mine. He knew who was handling his, which is a big leg up. Many times people send these forms in. It's a big hole, big black hole the forms fall into, and they don't know who is handling their particular case. So anyway, Steve says, when I didn't hear back, I called someone else who said she would send her an email to call me. And I still didn't hear back, he said. So today I'm going to call and get the matter escalated. I am told that if I get charged, if I get charged the IRMA penalty, I'll get a refund after the form SSA-44 is processed. But I don't need this BS giving the government money so they can give it back to me. Well, Steve, think about it this way. Sometimes the government takes money from you and then gives it to somebody else. So even if they wind up giving it back to you, you're still better off than a lot of people are. So Steve continues, I can't find anything official online about this, but several people told me 60 days is the expected processing time. I'm thinking about getting one of my U.S. senators involved, although I'm not holding my breath on that one. Steve's in Texas. It might be, you know, depending on what district he's in, he might actually, his state senator may be in Washington, D.C., partying with the other Democrats. Anyway, so I said, sorry for the delay, Steve. I didn't answer him as quickly as I always like to. The short answer I get is that there is a different answer for every form, for every client, for every office in every city. I think the SSA offices are all still mostly being run from the homes of the employees. I haven't been able to identify any consistency at all, except for the lucky few who managed to connect, usually by telephone, with a sympathetic clerk at their local SSA office. And that clerk often will promise to shepherd them through the process. Therefore, after enough time has passed, I suggest that my clients reach out by telephone and try to find that sympathetic clerk in order to make sure the process hasn't been derailed. I wish I had a better answer for you. Well, Steve wrote me back and he said, hello, my friend. The latest update, I believe I told you that I got the name and extension of the person who is handling my SSA-44. I would leave a voicemail for her and not get a return call. I call and spoke to the general person, meaning the receptionist, I guess, or the, and that person answered and said she would send her an email to call me. I didn't get a call. This Monday, I called and I said I have a matter that I cannot get resolved. The person handling it won't return my calls. I want to schedule an in-person appointment. Their site said they would do this for important issues. Or I want to speak to a manager because this has gone on too long. She took a bit to check and then said there were no appointments available. She didn't say for how long. I suspect that there would be something available if you went out a month or two. She didn't address my request to speak to a supervisor. She asked me who was handling this and put me on hold and said that she got with her and it would be handled in a week. This tells me that the person was there and not returning calls. I'm not sure that's entirely accurate. The person could have been operating at home. These companies, including the government, have gotten pretty sophisticated at their communications, allowing people to work from their homes. And so I'm not sure this means that the person was sitting right there in the office, but it certainly could be. Anyway, so Steve continued, so I will see what happens next week. If nothing, I will try to speak to a supervisor. And then my next step is trying to see if the U.S. congressperson can help me or one of my U.S. senators. And then he said, I put a note into this guy that writes a Sunday column about Social Security. And the column is maximizemysocialsecurity.com/AskLarry. So Steve said, I heard back from his understudy, Jerry, who said that I would get reimbursed the penalty after the form was processed. He also said that he thought it would take 60 days. Now, why do I want to give the government money only to have them give it back to me? And as I said earlier, Steve, you're pretty lucky if you're the one that gets it back, because in many cases, they'll take your money and give it to somebody else. Anyway, he goes on to say, I am an IT project manager, which means you have responsibility without authority in many cases. Many times I have to ask someone several times for something. The person figures out that it's less trouble to give me what I want rather than to put up with me asking and escalating the issue. It's probably the same way with the Social Security Administration. They can delay a handful of people with a lot less energy than they are spending on me. And then he changes the subject. He refers to Dominic's gift, his generous gift that is the Medicare for the Lazy Man review persuasion bat that Dominic gave me. He said, take that bat and keep swinging. Take care, Steve. So Steve is not getting quick responses from the Social Security Administration. Now here's earlier correspondence with Steve. Maybe I should have started this before, but Steve says, back on July 12th, if you recall, Medicare wanted to hit me up with this IRMA charge. So I send them an SSA 44 along with a copy of my 2020 tax return. I think they already had that. Anyway, this was around June 14th. Today, I get a letter from them telling me how they were going to charge me this. So I called them and waited a long time on hold. I was told my SSA 44 would take 60 days. See, that's a consistent thing. He's been told several times by different people, 60 days, 60 days, 60 days. Sounds like a cliche. So I said, you're sending me this letter today saying that you are charging me. Does this mean my SSA 44 was rejected, or is it still in the 60-day cycle? Can you tell me if you are receiving this or if you've received this? She said that I probably should call the local office where I sent it. I tried calling them, but they're open from 9 to 4, and it was 4:20 p.m. So do you know, Steve is asking me now, do you know if you file an SSA 44, do you hear back and get something official as to whether it was accepted? Are the local offices seeing people in person? If they say they don't have it, I'd rather go and hand it over myself. I don't blame him. I would feel the same way as Steve did. So I responded, I think you have to take the bull by the horns and see if you can establish a contact with someone in one of these offices. Your local one would probably be the best candidate. That is the only way you can get one of these clerks to take some responsibility, which will, I hope, lead to some authority rubber stamping your IRMA forgiveness. There is no way to predict what will happen, but I'll bet someone in your local office would be happy to solve your problem if presented with a friendly but persuasive request for clarification. In a future podcast episode, I will be relating the adventures of a guy in Vermont who was given the runaround by several of these government types. The story has a happy ending because he eventually established a cordial relationship with a clerk who was willing to solve his relatively routine problem. It should serve as an inspiration for all of us. Good luck and keep me posted. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, this all occurred just a few days before the correspondence that I read you at the top of the episode. So anyway, Steve replied, Doug, thanks. I'm going to write up the sequence of events before I call so I have everything in front of me. They don't say it, but I have the feeling that these local offices are seeing people in person now. If possible, I'll try to get an appointment and go down there in person. I said, that sounds like an excellent plan. Let me know what happens. And then Steve said, here's some follow-up. He said, I called the local office. The person I spoke with was able to verify that they had received my form and that it had been assigned to a caseworker. She gave me the caseworker's name and extension. She suggested that 2 weeks might be a good time to call the caseworker. The letter I received yesterday is one that goes out with the passage of time that I would receive a decision on my SS 44. She said they were still working from home and that managers have to go in and process the mail and assign it to people. In previous times, I would have been able to go in person, have a decision right then, or at least in a couple of days. And that is an indication that your federal government is not immune from using the Wuhan flu as an excuse for not doing their jobs. This would really irritate me. It's one thing to have a panic that screws up all financial commerce, but it's quite another thing when they stretch it out for over a year and they use it as an excuse for ineptitude. I feel Steve's pain, and I really hope that he gets some response. But if he does, doesn't mean everybody else is going to get response. It just means that he's more of a bulldog than a lot of other people will be. Nobody wants to sit on the phone listening to their crappy on hold music for several hours waiting for somebody to come to the phone. So I feel, but I don't have answers. So I can't relieve the pain that these people are having. How are we doing? Are we anywhere close to crickets chirping?
We are past the crickets.
Oh, I must have yacked way more than I thought I did.
The other thing that popped into my head while you were discussing Steve's dilemma, was government efficiencies. Isn't that term just self?
Sounds like an oxymoron.
Yes, an oxymoron. Yes, government efficiencies, Social Security cares. You don't know what that.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is governments don't have to be efficient because they're monopolies. And that's the most inefficient type of financial activity there's ever going to be.
Absolutely.
Car makers are much more efficient because they have competition. So they're always striving to improve the cost of their services, improve the customer satisfaction. And they're always trying to do better to beat the competition. Let's see government get competition someday. I don't know. How would we do that? We'd start our own government?
I think we could do that. Randy's, I'm not sure how, but
start. We'll name it. We'll call it Randy's government of the Central Arizona.
There you go.
We'll see how efficiently you can do these things.
I think I could do better, but you just never know.
I don't think it'd be too hard to do better. I think you could take frequent naps and still do a lot better than many of these government offices are doing. I read only Steve's correspondence today, but I have had much other correspondence and questions from people having the same kind of frustration. How long does it take? How do you deal with this thing? What's the secret? They're asking me because I put myself out there as a Medicare expert, but yet I have to tell them, I don't know. I can't help you. Every one of these offices appears to be different. So all I can say is good luck.
Good luck. Good luck. That's really all you can do. Well, you know something, Doug?
What's that?
We need to thank our audience.
Thank you, audience,
for joining us today. It's been a very lively discussion, and we wish Steve well. And if there's other Steves in the world that are listening to this that are having similar problems, we wish you well and a whole basket load of patience. But on the other hand, we have just spent 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, but don't forget to buy your books. Even though we have spent the time, don't forget to go to Amazon.com, buy your books, get your audiobook, go to Barnes & Noble and get the color version, get something.
What's the name of that book, by the way?
Medicare for the Lazy Man. There easiest. And what's the whole thing? What's the whole thing? You want to give the whole thing?
Medicare for the Lazy Man, easiest and simplest. No, simplest and easiest guide.
There
ever.
You go. Hey, I tricked you.
It's the one with the red 2021 on the cover.
Yeah, as I always say, we have to go get several because I've heard that people love them. I've had relatives of my own that I've lent mine to, and it never came back. So apparently it's a great read.
Yep, it seems to be. People have sent me many little requests for more information with starting out by saying, hey, I read your book, dug it a lot. One woman yesterday couldn't stop telling me how she was laughing during the course of the book. Now, she might be easily entertained, but it's nice to hear that somebody else sent me a thing saying, I enjoyed reading your book, or it was fun to read your book. So I'm getting a lot of that kind of feedback, and therefore I highly recommend my own book. I'm going to pat myself on the back when we're finished recording here.
Even if you do say so yourself, right?
That's right. And I'll keep saying it until people listen. Well, thank you, Randy, for your help. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Now, I need to sign off like I always do. You've just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones around the metaphorical coffee table. And the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and the head pilot for MLM Air.
Bye-bye.